Well, it's a particular honor and pleasure to have with us our second speaker today, Lori Wallach, who is the director and founder of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Launched in 1995, Global Trade Watch is a leader in the global citizen movement for fair trade and investment policy. Lori has represented the progressive critique of corporate globalization before congressional committees, foreign parliaments, government agencies, national and international conferences, and infrequent media appearances as well. She is also a founding board member of Citizens Trade Campaign and the International Forum on Globalization, and she's the author of a book entitled Whose Trade Organization? A Comprehensive Guide to the WTO. Copies of that book are on sale also in the back of the room. Thank you very much. Please join me in welcoming Lori today.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming out today, and thank you to all the organizers. And it's a particular pleasure to always be in Seattle, which is the place where, as my colleagues from the Global South said, hey, you guys finally got it. Just 5 years ago, it just took you 5 years of NAFTA and WTO, duh. And then you woke up and realized what we'd been living with structural adjustment, when structural adjustment came to the North. So they celebrate Seattle and the protests of the WTO ministerial here 5 years ago as an act of solidarity, as an act of hope, given our governments, negotiators, and many of the companies based in the U.S. have been the main purveyors of that so-called Washington consensus, the set of policies that have been causing misery around the world. And so to see 50,000 of us out there was a sign for many people to take back to their governments, for the governments to take back and say, the government may be pushing it, but it seems that some of the people in that place don't like it either. And that really opened up political space in the context of the actual WTO negotiations and the attempts to expand WTO collapsed here and stay run amok ever since, given it's a very bad idea, and I'll explain where that is. But it is it was a turning point for global solidarity to fight for the better world we know is possible and for the different set of rules and arrangements that we know is possible. I'm going to start at the very end, which is to just pick up in a way on what you can do, which is sort of the key thing, because I'm going to talk about some really depressing things. I'm going to talk about stuff that is both depressing, but it should really piss you off, too. It's not necessary, and it is objectively damaging, and we can change it. And so I'm going to start with the happy part before I get to the depressing part, which is the first place I'm going to start is by saying we are currently living under a global regime of governance about which trade is the least of it. And there are different structures that are implementing a whole set of policies, often called the Washington Consensus. It's a whole smorgasbord of different kinds of policies, of which trade is only one. So the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, they do it through structural adjustment contracts, where a developing country is getting a loan, has to sign a contract, and the contract says, we will adjust our domestic policies on everything, how we decide to spend our budget, how we set up our economy, what our social programs are, our healthcare, education, and we'll do that in exchange for the loan. The same set of policies, if the IMF is able to dictate to a developing country in debt 100% of the smorgasbord, in the North American Free Trade Agreement, the NAFTA, which is a radical experimental trade agreement that went into effect in 1994, in the NAFTA, maybe 95% of that smorgasbord of policies were put into place. And in the WTO, the World Trade Organization, which is itself not an agreement, it is an international body. It has the same legal status as, say, the UN. It enforces 17 different agreements, only two of which have a passing connection to trade, the other 15 of which have to do with what you ought to do to rearrange your domestic politics and policies. All of those instruments are not inevitable. There's the old saying, he or she who writes the rules, rules. We did not write these rules. most people who are going to be affected by these rules didn't get a chance to participate in deciding them. But now these are the rules that are creating what is often described as corporate globalization. A set of, a whole paradigm of law and policy has been set up that determines what is profitable and allowable behavior for global capital and companies to conduct themselves. And there is nothing inevitable about those rules, nor is there anything inevitable about these outcomes. So there has been a great public relations campaign by the beneficiaries of this version of rules that it's inevitable. Perhaps it is like the moon's pull on the tides. This, in technical trade terms, is total horseshit. They made that up, and it's been repeated so many times that a lot of people have started to buy it, which is very depressing, because people living with the outcomes of this version of rules know they can't live with it. But if it's inevitable, what can you do? Or alternatively, we've been told it's good. This version of the rules lessens poverty. It will help the environment. It will spread the advance of good health care, et cetera, et cetera. We've all heard these lines. And number one, the data after 10 years of NAFTA and WTO is irrefutably the opposite, documented to a level of a peer-reviewed journal, because I've submitted the articles and had the footnotes mashed. But number two, again, it's a psych-out job. The notion that somehow the WTO, the IMF, the NAFTA came down via Mount Sinai from God, Moses schlepping an extra tablet. You know, this is like a great psych-out job because, oh my God, it's good or it's inevitable. But in fact, the first thing we have to do in thinking about this is get over both of those mind jobs and realize it's just one set of rules. So I actually haul across country, ladies and gentlemen, the World Trade Organization and the 17 agreements that it implements, 900 pages of just one set of global governance rules. Or the North American Free Trade Agreement. This isn't the trade part of either of these. This is the legal domestic law part. The trade part is actually almost as tall as me. It's the tariffs and the quotas. It's the real trade stuff. These are all policies that have very little to do with trade, that every signatory country must conform all of its domestic policies to. So literally, the operating clause of the WTO is, all countries shall ensure conformity of all laws, regulations, and administrative procedures to the attached agreements. All countries shall ensure conformity. Now, the way to think of these instruments, or the structural adjustment programs of the IMF vis-a-vis the developing world, is as a governance system. And if you think of it that way, the fight we're into here is something like countering a really quiet, slow-motion coup d'etat and democratic choice everywhere. Because this set of one-size-fits-all rules, because, you know, here it is, these are the rules in every country who's a signatory of these agreements has to sign up, may not be what you would choose if you lived there and wanted to think you were in charge of deciding your policies. May not be the thing that would suit a country depending on their level of development. May not be the priority, the policy, the choice. Doesn't matter. Under these rules, every country has to conform. And this is a huge and startling transformation from where we were. Because if people think, this woman is crazy, she's saying that all of our trade system is a sneaky way of backdoor undermining a bunch of laws we really love and appreciate, how could that be? Well, that is actually not what I'm saying. For 45 years, we had global trade rules. They were called the GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, and they dealt with trade. They dealt with trading goods, stuff being traded between countries, and setting up the terms when countries wanted to trade. So they dealt with tariffs, the level of taxes when goods go between borders, and they dealt with quotas, the amount of something you let in from another country. And they had a couple of general rules, like you can't treat something differently just because of where it was made, it's called national treatment, or everyone who signs the agreement gets the same deal. That's called most favored nation. But it was limited to trade in goods and basic trade stuff. In comes the WTO and NAFTA. As a trade attorney, or I often say in a public health crowd, I'm a recovering trade attorney. It's like an addiction. You never get past it, though if I start talking in Gatties, somebody goes, eh, so I translate. But as a trade attorney, when I first set my eyes in 1990 on the draft of the WTO, I kind of thought it was a joke. Because what you expect for a trade agreement is the GATT. That's what we were trained in law school. It's tariffs and quota, trade and goods. It's not like one-size-fits-all rules defining what countries have to make the subject of patentability and the term of patents over certain subjects. What's that doing in a trade agreement? Or a trade agreement has these sort of objective terms, like you can't treat domestic and foreign goods the same. But why is there 30 pages that describes how much pesticide protection I can provide my citizenry? If I decide zero risk of cancer, as long as I don't treat the domestic stuff better than I treat the imports, where's the trade rule? What's that doing in there, a meat inspection? Why should there be a limit on meat inspection as long as I'm inspecting the domestic and foreign stuff the same? Or why is there a whole set of rules about how I can regulate services operating within my country? Not trading services over the border. I sign up for an insurance company in another country. But literally, how I can regulate a foreign service company that's going to set up services, open a hospital, inside my country. Why wouldn't the rule just be you got to treat them the same as the domestic service provider? Why should there be special rules? So when I looked at that, I thought, all right, this ain't no trade agreement. What's that about? But at the time, in the early 90s, a lot of the most progressive members of Congress, scholars, newspaper writers, all thought anyone who might criticize something called trade had to be a protectionist, secretly an isolationist, stupid, a knuckle-dragger even. And those are the kind of names you got called if you said, hello, it's not about trade. Trade, good. The other stuff, like sneak attack, because many of the items that were in the non-trade parts of these agreements were precisely the very policies that groups like mine, which was formed as a consumer group, Public Citizen was started in 1971 by Ralph Nader, who, like everything he starts, once you get in your feet, promptly abandoned us in 1980 and went on to do other things. But we are a national consumer group with members. You know, we fight for things like safe medicine, access to good services, no toxics. And I'm thinking, suddenly it seems that all the things we've been working on, that we've been actually doing an okay job in Congress, are being renegotiated and the rules are being reset in a venue we aren't present. And so, given this is a public health group, I will explain one of the ways that Public Citizen got into this, because this is the demonstration of how much these trade issues, CAFTA being the newest, the latest, and ladies and gentlemen, the place that we can actually stop and turn around the failed model, where we can stop with this version of the rules and fight for something else, how this really does affect everything that people who are here think about and care about every day, which is Public Citizen had been one of those groups that had been fighting for decades against pharma, against the pharmaceutical industry, because prior to the WTO and NAFTA, the U.S. had a 17-year patent term. That meant the patent that you get in medicine had a monopoly term for 17 years, and during those 17 years, whoever held the patents could have total exclusive rights to market it. So, you know, I think there are people here who are old enough. Remember when Motrin, Nuprin, ibuprofen was still under patent? $8 a tablet, hope you had health insurance. Now you get the thing of 50 for $6. Okay, well, that patent was a 17-year patent. And the industry, the pharmaceutical companies, had tried forever to get a 20-year patent term. And the consumer groups and the elderly groups had beaten their pants off in Congress on about every three-year basis. Because everyone uses these meds, they thought the 17 years was enough, medicine was expensive enough, this was not a sympathetic audience. So one day, after speaking to some of the members of the Senate, who were those who were the champions on stopping the expansions, about the problem that embedded in NAFTA and WTO was, yes, a requirement that there be 20-year patent terms for every country you signed on. And remember, the term is, every country shall ensure conformity. So you vote for this and you're a signatory, you now must conform and have a 20-year term. So we went to the senators and said, hi, you're the king of making sure we don't have the 20-year extension. read this. And they say, oh, you must be understanding. I'm for free trade. Protectionist? Isolationist? Knuckle dragger? How could you possibly think I should vote against this new trade agreement? Well, then the day after the thing passed, and the Wall Street Journal has a story on the front page which said, patents extended to 20 years. Finally, mission of pharma accomplished after many tries. And the senators call up, excuse me, did you forget to tell us that bill was up? I mean, we're always the champion. Did you go to someone else? What happened? You lost. And we said, remember the WTO vote? That was just one of a thousand things that had nothing to do with trade, that had to do with your domestic policy prerogatives, you thought, that just got redone. And so that is one of the examples of how, say, a consumer and health advocacy group got into WTO. Now, if we were back to GATT, we would not be having this chat. But because we are facing CAFTA, which rhymes with NAFTA, which gives you a hint of what it is literally a six-country expansion of NAFTA, it is worth having this chat and now saying there are three things you can do before I get into the even more depressing part, which is there is an election coming up. This is still at least marginally a swing state. If you go to school here and you live in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and a number of other states, go home and vote. I have frequent flyer miles for you. No, I'm kidding. But voting, that's a joke. Frequent flyer miles, voting in this election and being able to make sure that even if you literally have to use your frequent flyer miles to get home, if you're not registered here or to register here, is really important because you do have a clear choice in this election between Bush, and I can't endorse a candidate. We don't do endorsements, so you have to sort of call it for yourself. You got Bush, who likes the status quo. He and Kerry started in the same place. They both voted for, Kerry voted for NAFTA. Bush endorsed it. Bush's daddy signed it. And they both thought WTO was nifty. And now here's the difference. It's 10 years later, and Kerry sees the 10-year record. So Kerry has been on the record saying he does not support CAFTA. It's a very clear difference. Bush supports the NAFTA expansion called CAFTA. He has signed it May of this year. He would like to bring it to Congress. He'd like to bring it to Congress in a lame duck session of Congress, which is why the next thing I'm going to mention is CAFTA as far as things to do, because that could be a live vote in the next 3 weeks. And he would like to have the same NAFTA expansion for the whole hemisphere, from Alaska to Antarctica. It's called FTAA, Free Trade Area of the Americas. Just think of NAFTA on steroids for the entire hemisphere. Very bad idea. Okay, then you've got Kerry. Now, I don't know what Kerry thinks is better. I don't think he knows necessarily what's better. He has some things he says he's going to do in a new trade agreement that he would sign and what he would do to renegotiate CAFTA to make it acceptable. Part of the work of folks here, for instance, would be to make sure that part of what is fixing CAFTA and doing it differently is to make sure the public health issues get taken care of. Senator Kerry has talked about environment and labor problems in those agreements. He's totally right. That's definitely part of the issue. But that ain't all of the issue. But the difference is Kerry said, all right, I take incoming data. I voted for it. I expected result A. I got result Z. Actually, being stubborn and arrogant and pretending that it's the same as 10 years ago and we have no data is not a matter of steadfastness. That's bad policymaking. Therefore, I don't want to keep going forward on this agenda. I want to have a 120-day review, this is what he said, to figure out what's going right and what's going wrong with our trade agreements. And I know for sure there's some things I would change in CAFTA, FTA, before I would support them. So it's a difference between more of the same or having a fight over what should be different. Because there's a recognition with Kerry that what we have right now ain't cutting it. And with Bush, we have more of the same. Second thing you can do is CAFTA. There literally could be a vote on the Central American Free Trade Agreement in the next 3 or 4 weeks. This agreement is really much more important than even its great importance to millions of people's lives in the affected countries, because this agreement is a referendum on the model that we've just all been discussing. It is a referendum on 10 years of what has become an increasingly discredited model. More and more people in more and more fields. Here is a book on the public health implications of this model. This is happening in more and more fields of expertise and interest. The model has taken it in the shorts. While it is gasping on the side of the ring, and we are creating a space to perhaps talk about what else, there is an attempt, obviously, to revive it and let it march ahead. And CAFTA is that fight. So if CAFTA gets rejected by Congress, is boxed and buried, we can talk about what else. If CAFTA gets approved and gets revived, then we're basically backwards of where we are right now, because we have the real-life suffering of people under NAFTA and WTO for those 10 years as some of our strongest points of why not to do more of the same. And the third piece of what we all need to do right away is public education. Now, here in Seattle, there's a Community Alliance for Global Justice, which is a great group that's brought together disparate interests to help fight and educate and fight for a different model and to educate the public. But within our own families, communities, in our education and jobs, there's a lot to be done to educate people. And there's some great materials on the back, but there are also a variety of really good websites. So Third World Network, TWN.org, a really excellent resource talking about what this model of trade and globalization has done to the developing world. Public Citizen has TradeWatch.org. It is a huge compendium of information about what has happened under 10 years of this model. And we post other people's stuff there. So, for instance, I don't know where Congressman McDermott's crew is, but Congressman McDermott signed a letter that just rocks about what you'd have to do to actually deal with the access to medicines issues under CAFTA. And given the man is progressive, fought for single-payer health care, and is a doc, when he writes something like that, other members of Congress go, uh-huh, the doc says, mm. And so he got like 10 other members to sign on to that letter. That letter is attached, linked to our website, because that lays out, for instance, very clearly what you'd need to do. And those are some of the kind of materials that you can find there. Now, why? Why do we have to do this education? And, you know, there's so much stuff out there, by the way. We have on our website, on almost every one of these issues, materials you can just print off. And unlike the WTO, we're not really interested in the intellectual property monopolies. So if you knock it off, if you put it on your letterhead, we do not persecute you, we celebrate you. So please feel free. These are for public use, and take whatever pieces are useful. And amongst the resources that are out there are this book, Who's Trade Organization, The Comprehensive Guide. It is a compendium of the 9-year record of the WTO, because no one had put it all in one place. And we organized it not according to the WTO's agreements, but rather the other way around, according to the issues. So just for this audience, Chapter 3, and we make it a little sarcastic, because otherwise it's going to depress you to a point where you will need serotonin reuptake inhibitors on irregular large doses. So this book, for instance, Chapter 3, warning, again, wise-ass names, the WTO can be hazardous to your public health. So each chapter is about a theme. So the environment one is the WTO's environmental impact. First, Godzilla 8 flipper. And the one on food is WTO is coming to dinner and food safety is not on the menu. But despite the wise-ass chapter titles, which is just to keep people in mind of the fact we've been like under a scam job of trying to psych us out and think this is inevitable, you got to kind of laugh at what a scam this has been, the contents are really serious. It's written accessibly, but it's written from the perspective of the different professions. So, for instance, when I wrote the public health chapter, I go from the issues in public health, which I'm just going to breeze over, and then in discussion we can focus on which parts of it you want to go on, and then had colleagues who aren't trade wonks but actually are in the public health world read it and see if it's successful. So it doesn't start with like the WTO agreements. It starts with the issues you guys work on and goes the other way around. And the book has that for rich country economies, poor country economies, food safety and food security, so access to food, the environment, human rights, labor rights, access to essential services, public health. And then there's a chapter that does the connection between the WTO versus the hemispheric agreements, CAFTA and FTAA, that we got some of our partners in Latin America to co-author with us. And then the last chapter is about the solutions. And then what we did to make it publicly education-friendly is, and these are back here for everyone to take, and they're on our web, there's a fact sheet that summarizes the findings of each chapter, but minus the 1,700 footnotes, that makes this a 300-page book. So this is like the education and information power tool, because we want people to be able to go back to the footnote. So when we say, which we do, that the switch from 17 to 20-year patents in the U.S. caused a conservatively $6 billion increase in drug prices over that 3-year patent period, we want you to be able to go back to the University of Minnesota study a peer-reviewed study that appeared in a journal that says that, and even get the page where the number is. So we've got footnotes up the yin-yang in here, so that when you don't believe us or someone you're debating doesn't believe us, you can go back to the original source and pull it out. But the text doesn't have them. They're endnotes. And these fact sheets, which again, take them, cut and paste them, make them into playing cards, any way that you think it makes it easier to understand, please use the materials that summarizes the findings. Now, what exactly are the findings of our 9-year investigation vis-a-vis public health? Now, I'm going to blend together some NAFTA and WTO outcomes because they're very linked. But the piece that I do want to make clear to put in context what's going on right now is if the structural adjustment dictated contracts are 100% of the smorgasbord of policies, and NAFTA is 95%, and the WTO is 80%, the push right now, it's all about the interests that benefit from that model of governance controlling us all, putting it over more countries. So on one parallel track, you have the CAFTA, a direct NAFTA expansion, or the FTAA, or a free trade agreement with Colombia, or another one with Panama that's being pushed in the hemisphere. There's one with the Southern African Customs Union that would have these very backwards, devastating intellectual property rules that could limit folks' access to life-saving antiretrovirals in the most high-risk places. That's one track. Another track is at the WTO proper, people know about the tear gas that was going on in the streets. But in Seattle at the WTO ministerial, what was going on in the suites was an attempt to take the part that's in NAFTA and not in the WTO and basically expand WTO to put in the NAFTA part. And so adding things that were fought back by the Brazils, the Indias, at that point the European Union, in the multilateral context, but that basically Mexico and Canada just got steamrolled on. And that includes a bunch of issues about services and access to basic essential services, be they government or be they in the private sector, so education, health, transport, etc. Those are issues around intellectual property. Those are issues about foreign investor rights. And that agenda, when it was in Seattle, was called the Millennium Round. And the attempt was to take the Millennium Round and push through a nice-sounding name, the sticking of the NAFTA leftovers into the WTO, so you turn that into the 95% coverage. And it was rejected. Because what was going on in the streets, in the suites, a lot of developing countries were saying, hello, we've been under this for 20 years. We know the IMF. We really are not going to actually sign on to that. Like, why don't we go back to the trade part, which is really lopsided, and fix the existing rules? Because the existing WTO after 5 years is causing us grief. Let's not add. And that same fight was revived in Cancun at the WTO ministerial a year and a half ago. People probably saw the coverage that once again an attempt to have one of these summits had a similar outcome to Seattle. That was a repackaging of the same old agenda. Now it's called the Doha Development Round, which might be one of the most disingenuous namings of a document ever seen, given it's often by the developing country official negotiators called the everything but development round. So that document was once again in Cancun, given it was basically the same agenda of expanding all those new pieces of NAFTA that aren't in WTO in there, was rejected. That fight continues right now on a global level at the WTO, and it's continuing country by country. And so in the U.S., where our companies and our government is pushing vociferously for that agenda, we have, I would argue, if you don't like the outcomes of what the status quo has been, a special responsibility, for instance, to deal with those members of Congress who are not out against CAFTA, because, yes, the vote could happen, and you will find in back a nifty fact sheet that amongst the other effects that could happen on Washington and effects of what have happened, lists those members of the House of Representatives who are not as wise as, say, a Mr. McDermott, who has pointed out the insufficiencies in CAFTA, and lists some of the folks like Mr. Inslee, Mr. Larson, Mr. Dix, and Adam Smith, who need a little bit more loving and education on this vote, which could happen in 3 weeks. So what exactly are the issues on public health? I'm going to overview, and then we'll go back as you're interested. First, access to medicine. The WTO, NAFTA, and CAFTA have a set of patent rules that set up a monopoly patent. They also have a system of limits on parallel importing and other mechanisms for having access to medicines. Now, the WTO doesn't. The WTO has the monopoly patent, but it's vague about the other issues, and through political pressure, activist groups around the world were able to get a declaration on public health and intellectual property rules and trade in Doha at the WTO in 2001. Now CAFTA, FTAA, and these other agreements stand to undermine this by basically taking away the very tools that were finally squeezed out in this proclamation at WTO, which filled in the vagueness of the actual WTO agreement by saying, yeah, you can do compulsory licensing. This agreement does not ban that, for instance. Now in NAFTA and CAFTA, it's called TRIPS Plus. The WTO agreement is called TRIPS, the Trade-Related Intellectual Property Agreement. And as a clue, of any WTO agreement that starts out by being called trade-related, that is the big honking warning that has nothing to do with trade. So trade-related intellectual property, nothing to do with trade. Trade-related investment measures, nothing to do with trade. If it starts with the TR acronym in the WTO, you know it really shouldn't be there. Access to meds, number one. Number two, access to health care. Both the WTO, through an agreement called the General Agreement on Trade in Services, this is GATS as compared to GATT. GATS is a services agreement in the WTO, and in NAFTA and in CAFTA are even more harsh versions of them. These are agreements that basically seek to commodify all services into new tradable units. So you take something that's currently a public service that is part of what you expect your tax dollars to have in exchange, and the idea of this agreement is to basically turn it into a new tradable good. So there is pressure to privatize, there is requirements to deregulate, and for any service that is covered under one of these agreements, there are just flat-out bans on things like needs tests, on restrictions on size, on restrictions on type of ownership. So, for instance, where I'm from in Wisconsin, elder care has to be, the provider of elder care has to be a not-for-profit. You can't have for-profit elder care. Cannot, if that service is covered, have a definition of whether it should be not-for-profit, public, etc. Can have quantitative limits, which means that, for instance, needs tests that typically go into coming up with whether or not you need another health service is forbidden. And there's a rule about limiting domestic regulations, even when they treat domestic and foreign service providers the same, so that they should be the least trade restrictive. Plus, there's a limit on subsidies of a covered sector, which is to say things like, well, for instance, the program, which I'm sure has a technical name, which I don't know, is the program that allows hospitals that have special services for uninsured folks who are in a, I think they call it, it's a local needs, local demands. So it's a part of the Medicare program where a hospital can get a higher reimbursement if they're doing primary care for a lot of people because there is underservice of general primary care health care, and a hospital can basically get a higher remuneration than, say, a for-profit hospital would who's providing the same kind of service to a Medicare recipient. That would probably be considered an illegal subsidy. Then you have a whole set of issues around regulation and labeling of dangerous substances. So anyone here work on tobacco and alcohol issues? Okay, so the kind of tools that you use, plain packaging of cigarettes. Well, there's a whole set of agreements called the Agreement on Technical Barriers to Trade that exists in both the WTO and in NAFTA and in the draft CAFTA. That agreement, and by the way, the name sort of says it all, a technical barrier to trade is any domestic regulation that limits trade. You could also call it the Public Health, Environmental, and Food Safety Standard, but no, they call it a technical barrier to trade, or in the case of food safety, a sanitary and phytosanitary standard. And the technical barriers to trade agreement lays out which of these barriers are allowable. Well, amongst the things that are limited are, for instance, certain kind of labels and certain kinds of content restrictions. So already, under NAFTA, the former United States Trade Representative, a woman named Carla Hills, who is Daddy Bush's trade representative, has basically threatened using NAFTA and gotten killed the Canadian Cigarette Plain Packaging federal law, which was going to adopt packaging that basically didn't have the trademark, like, you know, the snazzy red for Marlboro or whatever, but instead, like in some European countries, with a plain package that said things like, cigarettes kill. And that's how you had to label the cigarettes instead of sort of luring you into it. It sort of, scared you away from it. Probably under NAFTA, that is probably a violation of NAFTA, under the Technical Barriers to Trade Agreement. And then there's a whole set of issues around trademarks and labeling. So try out this for size. Everyone here knows about the Nestle Code, right? The UNICEF World Health Organization Code and the plain packaging of breast milk substitutes, i.e. the formula code. It was the code that was put into place after Nestle was really, and others were aggressively trying to get poor women hooked on not breastfeeding. So they would market in hospitals, go into the maternity wards, get women to actually use the formula after a week or 10 days free supply was up. Maybe you couldn't breastfeed anymore because your milk had dried up. Plus, there was a real campaign of advertising of sort of depictions of on the actual formula containers of a woman nursing and a sick, weak baby and a sick, weak woman next to, like, super baby who's drinking a bottle. And the idea was, with women who might be illiterate, to just do the depiction of why this was better than breastfeeding. Well, there was a UN treaty after a lot of campaign to limit that. A lot of countries adopted it. Guatemala's one. One story that's in this book in the public health chapter that no one else really knows about except for this chapter, this book now, is that Guatemala was threatened with a WTO challenge by the US, arguing that because Gerber baby foods, Guatemala passed the code. Guatemala had actually a noticeable decline in infant mortality. No way, it wasn't a controlled study. There's no way to know if that's what did it. But it just coincidentally, they were held up by UNICEF as a poster child of reducing infant mortality, and one of the key elements UNICEF concluded it was about was actually really strongly implementing the code and actually increasing breastfeeding in that country. Everyone had followed the rules, which were adopted into domestic law, which was plain packaging, etc., except for Gerber. Now, of course, Gerber's got the fat baby face, which the very baby face is a violation of the plain packaging rule, no depiction of children. So Gerber just kept fighting. About 6 weeks after the WTO went to effect, Gerber got the U.S. government, State Department, I have all these documents for someone who'd like to peruse them, to write a letter telling the government of Guatemala that if they did not cease and desist trying to get Gerber baby foods to follow their domestic law, which, by the way, had been in place at that point for 3 years, and only Gerber was not following the law, if they did not lay off, then they would challenge the law implementing the health treaty at the WTO, because now that there was the WTO, Gerber's fat baby face was trademarked. And the WTO agreement on intellectual property is not just patents. It's trademark and copyright, too. So now the WTO agreement actually trumped the health agreement. The trademark of the fat baby face took precedence. And if Guatemala wanted to get into it, they dragged their buns right to Geneva into a tribunal. Because this is how these things are decided. You might say, all right, you have all these crazy rules, but how are they decided? The WTO is self-enforcing, unlike all of our environmental or health or labor rights agreements. So it has its own internal system. And there, one country can say to another country, your domestic laws go beyond what's allowable in these agreements. And we're going to take you to this tribunal, which is three trade attorneys who meet in secret. Now, if there's a real trade issue, and some countries actually being protectionist and keeping stuff out, this is useful to have a place you can go and say, yo, you signed up to this agreement vis-a-vis trade in widgets. We need to have this out because they're keeping out our widgets, and we need to have a place where you're going to have to start behaving according to the rules. It is a very different situation if suddenly, instead of tariffs and quotas on widgets, you're talking about the future of your public health, food safety, environmental, and essential services in the country. So this adjudication system has trade attorneys deciding these things. They come off a list, and there are no conflict of interest rules. So you can have a trade attorney in the private world who's on a roster who gets picked for one of these tribunals who is representing someone in the industry in their private practice who has an interest in the case. And in fact, in our book, there's a whole chapter on the direct conflicts of interest we found, which were numerous and glaring. So clearly, they're not doing conflict of interest. No due process. Everything's secret. The press and public can't go in there. You find out about the ruling 30 days after it's been issued. There is no accountability and there's no outside appeal. And once these tribunals rule, what they do is they announce to the country whose law is outside the rules, you must change your law or else you face perpetual trade sanctions. This is no small thing, perpetual trade sanctions. So, for instance, when the U.S. went after the European Union ban on artificial growth hormones in meat, and one of these WTO tribunals said, well, Europe, you ban it for your own farmers, and you ban it for imports, but it's still illegal under the WTO because you can only use international food standards now. And the international food standards listed by the Codex Alimentarius actually think that these suspected carcinogens are just fine. So you can't have the precautionary principle treatment and keep out these artificial growth hormones. You have to let it in. That, in 92 final rulings of the WTO, is the only case where a country said, will pay the damn sanctions. And they've been paying $170 million a year in trade sanctions since 1998 for the right not to eat food that their public has rejected and passed non-discriminatory laws about keeping out. In every other instance, when the trade sanctions are threatened, countries change the law or they lobby to get more time to change the law. And that includes the U.S., who's changed a bunch of laws and regulations. So in the case of Guatemala, basically, the health minister had sent these documents and called and said, is this true? Can they do this? I mean, I thought trade agreements like the WTO were about trade. What are they talking about? Infant health in my country and labeling of formula. And we said, yeah, it's true, and we think maybe we can psych them out of actually continuing with the case. Because as we heard with the Brazil case, that finally got pulled back after a huge public shitstorm of protest. But it was going to cost $1 million to defend that case. Well, $1 million was a sizable chunk of the child immunization budget of that whole country. And they had a 50-50 chance of winning. And in the end, they decided it was too risky. So they changed the law. And now Guatemala, which had been the great enforcer of the Nestle's code, has changed their federal law so it only applies to domestic manufacturers and no imports. Well, 80% of the market's imports, so it doesn't really apply in that country anymore. That was just a threat. That case actually never came to final adjudication because, as is now more and more the case, a developing country who gets threatened just gives up the law instead of having to pay to defend. So labeling, tobacco and alcohol, access to meds, access to health care, toxics. Many elements of public health have to do with both keeping products that are toxic out of the marketplace, but also making sure that the workplace is free of toxics. The technical barriers to trade agreement is actually the basis for an ongoing USWTO threat to sack the new European chemicals regulation system called REACH. Who knows about REACH? It's a very progressive new system to deal with the fact that there are thousands of chemicals on the market that have never been tested for safety. These are chemicals that were on the market before the existing federal law in the U.S. came to effect in a lot of other countries. This would go back to those that are suspected to be dangerous, test them, register them, etc. The U.S. chemical industry has the Bush administration filing official documents threatening that this will be the next subject of attack. And given there's been a whole series of cases like that, that is an enormously chilling effect. That law has been half gutted before it's even been passed because of a year and a half of USWTO threats. Then there's the whole issue of water, sewage, basic health infrastructure. In the WTO, CAFTA, and NAFTA, these are called services agreement issues. So again, back to the GATS versus the GATT. Whether you can have public or private, whether you can have subsidized or it has to be operating in the market, water and sewage facilities, is if you have those sectors committed, is a matter of an international trade agreement, even though it's about what's happening with your water and your poo in your country. No one's trading any of those things. It's in your country, and you are being told how you, in your country, may or may not decide how it's owned, operated, or regulated. Then there's the issue of food, access to food, and also food safety. Access to food is an issue of the WTO Agreement on Agriculture and in the CAFTA and NAFTA Agreements on Agriculture. That's a whole issue that we could have a discussion on, but the bottom line of it is these agriculture rules are about trading commodities, not about ensuring food sovereignty or food security. So it's not about making sure people eat. These are rules that really facilitate an enormous jump in the volume of grains and other foods being traded. That's happened in 10 years of NAFTA and WTO. In those same 10 years, over 2 million campesino farm families in Mexico have lost their livelihoods, have lost their subsistence farms, and found themselves basically falling into starvation because of a set of trade rules, which we can talk about, that are all about finding cheap commodities to trade versus feeding people. Then there's the food safety rules, food inspection, sanitation, pesticide standards, all under the Agreement on Sanitary and Phytosanitary Standards, and they're similar, that's WTOs, the same ones in NAFTA and CAFTA. Then there's the Agreement on Government Procurement. In WTO, only 23 countries are on it, but in CAFTA, it's mandatory and obligatory, same thing in NAFTA. That has to do with when the government is buying medicine, or buying medical services, for instance, among many other ways the government is involved in the market. Then there's the whole issue of testing and approval and safety of products and medicines. All of the testing and approval and other regulatory issues are either to be deregulated or to be harmonized. Harmonized is one of those words like offshoring. That actually is a word that is being used as something that's really nasty, like offshoring. It could also be called the trend for middle-class U.S. evisceration. But they call it offshoring. So harmonization is basically a word for having one-size-fits-all regulatory practices and standards. And in the WTO, NAFTA, and in the draft CAFTA, which actually refers back to WTO for these standards, the rule basically is that any international standard, including those made by private entities, are the presumed trade legal standard, and if you do anything higher, you're subject to challenges violating the agreement. And there's a thing called the International Conference on Harmonization. Who here's heard of it? It is the drug industries of Japan, the US, and Europe. They set the standards. The FDA is not there. You are not there. The consumer groups are not there. That is a recognized international standard. And so if you wonder about this whole fight about two species carcinogenity testing in the US pharmaceuticals approval system, that is actually an International Conference of Harmonization standard that the U.S. is about to adopt and weaken our domestic standard because under WTO and NAFTA, we have to, theoretically. And that doesn't even get onto the whole issue of rising income inequality and the economic effects of increased poverty and income inequality, which have been, again, in peer-reviewed journals, you've seen the data of what the health outcomes are in the context of rising income inequality. So all of that's the lay of the land. We can go into more detail on any part of it, but the one thing I would recommend besides the vote, kill CAFTA, and educate your friends, family, and peers, is if you want to dig into this stuff, it's like written in an intentionally inaccessible language, which I jokingly call GAFTA-ese. But it is actually totally understandable with a little help. And so one thing I didn't haul out here, but it's on our web, tradewatch.org, is a document called The Pocket Trade Lawyer, which as well as being in English is in Portuguese and French and Spanish and numerous other languages because activist volunteer translators have put it into their home languages. It takes all the jargon. It's basically how I got expelled from the Alumni Association of Harvard Law School. You do not have to do the 3 years. You just sort of take this, take the trade agreement, and got it. No, I'm kidding. It has all the jargon. It has all the legal tricks. So like words that seem like one thing in normal English, if you look in a dictionary, but really mean something totally different. The difference between and or, which is like the difference between life and death in these agreements. Those kinds of tricks, all the acronyms, the stunts, are in basically a 30-page little pamphlet. So that if you want to open up the CAFTA and take a look, you can actually do it. Now, you're lucky because you've got, like, Angelina, who's gone through the intellectual property rules of CAFTA, which we can, she and Steve also, should all come up here and for Q&A, can go through the details. Or for the access to med stuff, someone like Steve has already gone through and said, here's what you get with the structural adjustment programs, here's why people are being ousted. But if you want to feel it for yourself, you want to see it for yourself, it seems unbelievable, you can dig right in there. And that really is sort of the job we all have to do one way or another, is to get educated, get involved. And I just want to mention one more time the Community Alliance for Global Justice, who is sort of a local connection to what is not only a national movement of progressive people who are fighting for what we know can be a better set of rules. We're not the people who want autarky. We're not for no trade. In fact, one of the things we see is if the current system allows to be played out for the next 20 years, it will implode itself. It will crash the markets. It will lead to conditions of ungovernability, ill health, lack of infrastructure. So the question is, are we going to have total autarky, chaos, more people dying in wars, and I'm only being partially intentionally facetious, or are we going to have a plan of how we create the power to go from a system of rules that's failed to one that can more suit the needs of the world? And there's a special role for people in the U.S. to make sure our government is actually going to be part of that versus stopping that. And there are a lot of key opportunities coming up right now to get involved. So thank you very much, and grab materials if you are so inclined, buy the book, and please just keep thinking and talking about these issues. Thank you.